Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the UBS Conversations podcast channel. I'm joined today by Justin Waring, Senior Total Wealth Strategist, and Katie Williams, Discovery Strategist, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Today, we'll be discussing how to address your company stock within your financial plan, including how you can manage risks and behavioral biases effectively. Katie and Justin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
So many investors receive company stock as part of their total compensation package from their employer. So to start us off, Katie, can you please tell us what are some of the different types of equity compensation one may receive and what are the advantages?
Sure. Thank you. I think a lot of people assume that these are considerations made only for executives at very large corporations, but really for any employee who work at either a publicly traded company or a company with stock holdings, this is something to be aware of. And so, as you mentioned, equity compensation can come in the form as part of your salary, or for many companies, it actually is part of the bonus compensation. And so you may see things like stock options. And what a stock option is it allows you the opportunity to buy a company stock holding at a certain price in the future. And for most times, you want to be doing it at a price lower than what it's currently trading at. You may get restricted stock, just meaning that although you may own the stock, there are, like I said, some limitations on what you can and can't do with it. Stock appreciation rights, but most people are probably aware of what's called an employee stock purchase plan. And what this has to do with is how allowing you to buy stock in regular increments, so you're really doing some dollar cost averaging, and maybe your company will match you with some shares. And the thing about this is that for most companies, these are voluntary. So you have the option to opt in, and they're great ways to build wealth while working inside your company. Now, for those companies in which it's a grant or it's a mandatory component of it, it's still a wonderful way to create wealth, because for some of these plans and some of these opportunities, you're going to get some tax benefits. So, for example, if you hold this holding for a period of time, you may get favorable tax treatment when and if you decide to sell. So there's really a lot of advantages and upsides to participating in owning your company stock.
Thank you, Katie, for kind of setting the stage there. There are so many different types of equity compensation that you can receive, and it can all be very confusing, not just from a contribution and distribution standpoint, but also just from a tax standpoint. So thank you for kind of setting the stage there for us. Now, Justin, in general, can you just provide us with an overview of what some of the risks are associated with owning shares in your company's stock, and how can investors manage some of these risks?
Well, like Katie said, there are a lot of advantages to owning your company's stock, but there's also some drawbacks. The main drawback being that owning a lot of company stock could be leading to a lack of diversification. If your company does really well, that could be great for your career. It could mean more promotions. It could mean, a more attractive line item in your resume in the future. But if your company does poorly and its profits are challenged, you might lose money in the stock side of things. But this also might lead to layoffs or fewer promotions across the company. And when you're very young, one of your biggest assets is your future earnings potential. And so a large correlation between your future earnings potential and stock sort of doubling down on the same type of risk. This is especially true for, investors who are employed at a company with few competitors, it's just exposed to your company's performance, but also the performance of like that narrow sector. And so one of the main ways to sort of protect yourself against this risk is first and foremost to limit your exposure to company stock. So try to diversify away from company stock with some of your savings. But it's also important for you to invest in your skills and qualifications to help you boost your earnings potential and expand your employment opportunities to include other companies and sectors, just in case there is a downturn in your company or your sector.
So we've spoken about some of the advantages and spoken about some of the risks or downsides or disadvantages of it. And it just kind of goes to show that investing in your employer's stock can be incredibly emotional, not only just because there's that financial dependence involved, but there's also a personal connection that you have with your employer, your company. So, Katie, can you please speak to what some of the behavioral biases are that we may encounter when investing with our employer stock?
Yeah, I love talking about this, as you guys are probably aware, because a behavioral bias, there's no one who is immune to it. And as you mentioned, when something is emotional, we tend to be more likely to succumb to a behavioral bias. And we know when investing, when this has to do with our finances and our profession, we have strong emotions, and so we may be more susceptible to these biases. And this is really important, number one, because no one's immune. But number two, it's because this is the time when we make rational investment decisions that maybe we aren't aware of. And it can be more difficult for us when we're in this situation to rationally manage, you know, our exposure to the company stock. So let's take these for example, and we'll just go to, you know, a few. I would say one of the most common that we see within employees and their company stock is this overconfidence or familiarity bias. Now, what is that? It's when you believe you have a special insider control over the company's performance, right? You say, well, I work in this company. I know the people. They're all good people. So it can make it difficult for us to be objective, and it leads us to overestimating perhaps the company's future performance, the stock price, and therefore we may wind up becoming overconcentrated. Status quo is another one, or endowment bias. Sometimes I also, in this line of thought, I think about herd mentality, when we're just going to stick with our current holdings, right? We hear everybody around the water cooler talking about the stock and how great it's doing and things like that. And if we are not being objective and stepping outside and thinking about this rationally, we might miss opportunities to actually diversify and sell off a portion of our holdings. And then one that is I have seen has come up a lot lately is the anchoring bias. And this is really common in just everyday piece. But this creates times when employees will have to fixate on a specific reference point. So let's just say that the company hit an all-time high 3 weeks ago, and you're wanting to diversify out, and it's down 10%. Well, you're looking at that all-time high, using that as your watermark, right? And so that may influence whether or not you sell, because you say, well, it's not at the all-time high anymore. And this loss aversion can actually make you more sensitive or fearful of losses when in actuality you're still very close to an all-time high. So all of these biases can lead to suboptimal timing of when you sell and if you sell. And the first step is really to just be aware of these biases.
Yeah, Katie, you said something at the beginning that really stuck with me, and it's that nobody is immune to these behavioral biases. And while awareness is certainly helpful, just because you're aware of it doesn't mean that you're going to totally be able to avoid the biases that we have. So, Justin, how can we manage these behavioral biases that Katie had spoken to?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, you know, it's one reason why it's useful to get some outside expertise and outside opinions on your investment strategy. It's a little bit hard to get distance from these questions, a little bit hard to build context around how much is too much company stock to own. One way that we can think about setting up a maximum amount of company stock to hold is we really don't want to be owning company stock if it's for near-term expenses or a safety net for emergency spending, because company stock can be quite volatile and it's not suitable for short time horizons. You know, any investment in a single stock is going to be prone to more risk of a prolonged drawdown than a diversified portfolio. And again, thinking back to how your stock might be correlated to your own personal finances, if the company stock is doing poorly, it might be an environment where you're more likely to be laid off as a result of poor company performance. And so there could be some correlation between the stock performance and when, you know, and the price that you might be forced to sell it at, if you are laid off and then need to live off of your savings. And so it's important to talk with a financial advisor and have a financial plan where you are resilient and robust to any swings in the company stock so that you could wait them out and diversify away from company stock over time. And, you know, one of the other major steps that you can take is to build a safety net to protect you against the risk of a short-term drawdown in the company stock. Make sure that you have an emergency fund and any funds that are earmarked for net portfolio withdrawals in the next 3 to 5 years shouldn't be invested in any stock. That should be money that's set aside in cash and high-quality bonds so that you can rely on those assets to meet your family's needs, regardless of what the stock market is doing and regardless of what your company stock is doing.
So to just kind of summarize our conversation today, we spoke about how investing in your company stock can be incredibly emotional, and it can certainly put us in a position to fall victim to our behavioral biases, but certainly becoming aware of our biases and then identifying the purpose of these assets and also working with your financial advisor to incorporate these assets into your financial plan are all steps that we can take to manage and almost even harness some of these behavioral biases. So Katie and Justin, it was so great catching up with you both. Thanks for joining today, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.